This is Maria Buyukos.
And this is Zachary Richard Hill.
And you're listening to Creative Honey. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Creative Honey. It's Maria and Zach here.
Maria was really insistent on making sure we got this kind of like intro, part of the podcast, and like we have to tell everyone it's Creative Honey. So hopefully you know now.
It's just a consistency thing because he was kind of just going right in out of no context, just out of nowhere, no intro into the topic. So I just was like, slow your roll, guy. We got to like keep it consistent, at least.
A good point. I hear what you're saying. I was just kind of thinking we've been talking about how we should just let the podcast kind of just be a little more loose so we can actually be consistent and record podcasts. So we're just laying it all out for whoever listens today. You know, we overthink the podcast typically, and that's why we never record podcasts. So, you know, we're just letting loose to see what happens today.
Yeah, we've continuously tried to evolve, and we've had many long breaks, and it's, you know, it breaks our heart when we don't, you know, keep continuing, but we just realized that we just need to freaking do it. Just talk, do it, see what happens, and we want to try a few different things. You know, we want to try in this episode to just talk about what's been going on with us and let it lead into a conversation. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. So on that note, let's chat about what we're going to chat about. I think something that's worth doing though is, giving us some career life update on your end, Maria, because it's going to make what you bring to the table all the more relevant, I think, you know, considering what you're doing these days. Why don't you tell all the folks what's going on?
Well, so I recently, as of a couple months ago, got out of my freelance role and got hired on as a UX UI designer at a telemedicine company here in Glendale. And it's been just super amazing and I love it. previously, I was a contractor on and off over the last 2 years, doing my own thing, but also getting called into Disney Studios and doing more of like the print stuff. So, and some stuff for Disney Channel. So I'm really happy to be doing UX UI again. It's really just my jam. And it's crazy. Just in 2 months, like I've just learned so much. And in telemedicine, which in case any of you are wondering, what is telemedicine? It is actually a way for patients to talk with their doctors and receive care remotely. So they don't have to come into the doctor's office for everything. So they can have chats and video calls and they can view all of their there's like a health portal where they can view all their information and results, and they can, you know, go over that with their doctor. So this helps people who maybe are lacking mobility, people who live far away and live hours away or from like a doctor's office. This opens up a lot of opportunities for hospitals to better manage their patients and things like that. So it's a really, really awesome like UX mindset in this type of project, because it's so accessibility driven. So you really have to think about like every possible scenario and design for the most accessible product that also can stay up to date with what people are expecting out of UIs. So it's a really cool challenge and the team's awesome and I just love it.
Totally. I've been describing anyone that asks that, you know, you kind of work for a health tech company. So would that kind of,
it is a health tech company. It's just this health tech company is in the realm of telemedicine. So that's basically, yeah, those are the two identifiers sure. You could use.
Yeah. No, that's pretty awesome. And, you know, we're both kind of in that UX digital strategy world now, which is awesome. I think we'll have a lot more to talk about as a result. And I think, you know, we're planning to have some of your fellow colleagues on the show at some point. I think I definitely talking about getting Andy on for sure.
He's super down.
Yeah.
Where it will definitely, he has a great perspective. As so it'll be fun to get him on. Oh, we got kitties.
Yeah. No, totally. No, we do. I was literally about to say, guys, we're not like keeping stray animals in our apartment and torturing them. We just have actually two brand new kittens. That's the real life update at the Hill household. And
what are their names?
You know, she just wants attention right now. Oh, yes, names. Astra and Nova. Right now, Astra is a daddy's girl for sure. But they both love their mommy, and it's been great having them so far. But naturally, they see us recording the podcast.
It's funny because we haven't done a podcast since we've only had them for 2 weeks. And it's funny because they have free roam around the apartment still, but they're still meowing anyway. I don't know. So bear with us. If you hear little yelps and meows, that would be Nova in the background with her various meowing techniques, kind of serenading us. So please pardon that if you hear that here and there.
Or not pardon us. Maybe you love cat sounds. Maybe you just want to roll with it. So
yeah, maybe you like bellowing cat sounds.
Totally fine. Oh. Yeah, whatever works. You know, but we aren't here to talk about cats.
Yeah, Zach, why don't you give an update? Zach has been going lightning speed into new realms and dimensions of design, and I'm just so excited for him to tell you what he's been up to.
I feel like you set this up for like a segue into what we're actually going to talk about for the most part today. Impressive. You're really good at the segue so far. Yeah. So no, I'm still working with Toy, and this still is not a negative. It's a positive. I'm excited that I'm working with Toy, doing a lot of amazing things with my colleagues there. It's been great. We just launched our new website. So we kind of didn't announce it, and we don't really plan to. We just want to focus on like doing good work and spreading the knowledge of kind of what we're doing lately. I don't know, that doesn't sound right, but it sounds like really arrogant. That's not what I mean at all. I mean, like just kind of, spreading the love of what we're learning to other people, I guess. Yeah. So, launch a new site, doing good work, with good people. And, but then when it comes to, what I was saying about kind of education, we're really all in on design sprints. And I think that's kind of the main thing we're going to talk about today. So I'm going to take your segue and do more segues with it. So yeah, we're like all in on design sprints. You know, long story short, we've been doing really strategy focused engagements for quite a while now, Toy. We kind of came across the design sprint, written by Jake Knapp, who's he was a Google Ventures designer, wrote this book. And, it's a really great book. And one thing that excited me was that, at Toy, we were kind of doing all of these exercises that kind of Jake talks about in his book, but maybe not quite in that order and maybe not in that kind of specific way to get the best results possible. So we were doing pretty well with them, kind of workshops. And then we kind of found the sprint recipe book, kind of blew all of our minds. And Maria, you got a chance before you started working with Snap to do a sprint with us. Can you tell a little bit, can you tell the audience a little bit about the design sprint experience you had with us?
It was a really great eye-opening experience, and it was just so focused, and it was so great to see the team really voice their individual opinions and be heard, and to kind of collectively come to these analyzing and coming to solutions together. And it was just really cool to see everyone from the CEO, to the designers and even me, who was a guest, to be able to voice their opinion. But not only that, just also to just hash things out and have intellectual discussions about things, but also in a very structured way so that you don't go off on tangents and start arguing about side things. Like it's, doing these exercises that Zach was leading that helped us to stay on track and focus in on what we're really trying to solve. And then The other cool part was just kind of uncovering the various layers of stuff that that came up that we weren't even expecting. Like all these cool, it was like magical, like all these cool things were unfolding that we didn't even think about, but came out as a product of opening up the discussion and being focused and working together. So yeah. It was very powerful, and I'm just like totally sold on it now.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear. And like kind of the backstory here, you were doing some work with us kind of as like the lead, you know, UX designer for this particular project that we did together. So can you, you know, I feel like we're kind of, I'm interviewing you now. This is awesome. I'm like, you know, we just turned a discussion interview. That's what I just did there, but I'm going to do it anyway. you know, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how maybe that design sprint process helped you, you know, execute on the UX end?
I think it was just invaluable to hear, kind of get to the roots of what the company believes in, what they're trying to achieve, the things that they have gotten hung up on, and all the possibilities that open up once you get through those and figure out why their barriers or why their boundaries are self-inflicted, you know, by each individual's part of the company. And it really helped me as a designer to get to the very bottom of what was necessary and to actually have a clear roadmap basically that came out of this as to what I needed to do and to get it done in a much quicker amount of time with a lot less back and forth. It just completely streamlined the process in a way that, I mean, I thought it would, but I didn't expect it to streamline in the way it did, like to the extent that it did. So it was just very awesome for me on that side too.
Yeah, no, awesome. Happy to hear that. All, you know, I was kind of semi expecting, you know, these kind of answers, to be transparent. You know, one, because you're my wife and I know you believe in me and I appreciate that. And I know you believe in the power of the design sprint. So, but I'm so happy to hear it was working so well for you. And, you know, just so you all know, like the design sprint is kind of, it's a great recipe for all that design thinking stuff that you're probably hearing out in the world. Even if you're not like a designer, or even a creative person, I'm sure you've heard design thinking, and you see all the sticky notes and conference rooms and whiteboards, and you know, basically, I think Jake Knapp did a great job of kind of structuring that whole mentality. And I know it kind of started with like Stanford and IDEO, so to speak, and a little bit IBM, but I think kind of Jake took it somewhere else.
Do you want to explain a little bit, Zach, as to what his perspective is and why this is such a powerful, I guess you'd say, set of methods or ideology that he's bringing forth?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, like I keep saying, like the design sprint is basically like a recipe book, right? So it's a 4-day process, or really a 5-day process, but we've consolidated into a 4-day process. We've been learning from a couple other agencies like AJ and Smart and you know, a couple other agencies that have really kind of condensed things. But really, it's a 4 or 5 day process that you start with getting people in the room to have a conversation, learning from experts and defining goals. And then, you know, by the end of the, or kind of by the midway point, you're sketching with this team, both, you know, stakeholders and creatives, and you know, maybe not even creatives. They don't even need to be in the room necessarily, but just a team of people in that whiteboard room, you know, sketching, creating solutions for, you know, established goals and challenges. And then, you know, by the end of the week, you're going to have a prototype that has been designed and tested. And the really cool thing about that is that now you can spend the rest of your time, you know, with your project focusing on just iterating on something that's already been built, you know, rather than spending kind of months just getting to that first prototype.
Yeah, that's It's huge when you hear, when it sounds very streamlined when he's describing it, it's because it really is that streamlined. It's not even like an exaggeration. Like, you really will be able to start prototyping so quickly, and you're not siloing everybody's opinions, like, you know, okay, you take this part with, you know, it's like everybody kind of collectively comes to some agreements on things through asking the right questions and exploring and hearing and being there and listening. And then everyone's like, okay, these are the things we want to keep, you know, this is why we did this. And now we can really cohesively as a team start from the same point and be congruent before they start that process.
Yeah. I think one thing I'm taking from what you're saying is the silos, right? Like, you know, and that's one of the kind of the key secrets and ingredients for like design thinking that the design sprint really kind of takes up to the next level, which is breaking down those silos and getting, you know, teams from the marketing department and teams from, or people from the design department and the engineering development department and the business department, like, you know, just getting all people from all sides of the company to get in a room together, discover challenges and solve them. And that's really the exciting part. That's when I've seen the magic be able to kind of work, so to speak. And it's also really cool, you know, when we get to see, you know, everyone kind of be equal. And what I mean by that, like in a design sprint room, you maybe have like one decider and that's important, but, you know, the CEO gets heard, you know, obviously his or her fair share, but at the same time that, you know, junior designer or junior marketing exec or engineer, a junior person in the room has their chance to be heard as well. And I think that's really important.
Exactly. It's so neat to see the pieces of the company at all levels have almost like an equal voice and to all have that freedom to express things. Because, you know, sometimes people have great ideas, but they feel like they're so low on the totem pole that no one's ever going to hear it. And so it just, you know, maybe they have an ingenious solution, but people don't give them that chance because of a certain structure they've implemented. So this takes away, kind of strips it down and just looks everybody as like a potential set of ideas. Like each person represents a segment of the idea making process. And Zach, right. I was kind of curious too, like, you know, we're talking about using this in the design way, but Zach, do you want to talk a little bit about how people can use this process in like other ways besides just the design world?
Yeah, I definitely can. I think that the sprint mentality, could be used to solve a wide array of problems that maybe aren't directly related to, you know, product design, UX design, et cetera, et cetera. I think you're kind of, look, what you were talking about and what we kind of been talking about so far is really kind of the key ideas behind running any kind of sprint. And just because it's called a design sprint, it doesn't have to be just for design problems, so to speak. It could be for anything. I know I've said that like three times. So if you don't know, it can be for anything. And because what I'm getting at here is that if you could kind of use this recipe to, again, the two big things is give everyone, you know, equal opportunity to kind of provide an idea and break down silos so everyone's working together, then I think a lot of magic happens. And actually a third thing that happens here that's super important is that the design sprint process, or kind of the design thinking process, provides opportunities to kind of come up with ideas in a structured way, and it kind of deletes the traditional brainstorming mentality or brainstorming processes, and using things like sticky notes and silent note taking and voting kind of eliminates a lot of group speak and group think, and really can make meetings way more efficient. And I think that's really important no matter what kind of company you're running. It doesn't have to be really design related.
Exactly. And that's a powerful thing, because the whole concept of, yeah, it's kind of like basically being able to get to a better process through this, and you can apply this to anything because it is a powerful uniting process. So yeah, I would be excited to hear about different people trying this in different ways outside of just design.
You know, maybe we could talk about what might come next after the design sprint, and it kind of goes a little bit about what you've experienced before, Maria. Like, you know, since you kind of did one with us, like, how did the design sprint, like, what did you do next after the design sprint was finished for you?
We had to actually create something in a matter of hours. And it actually ended up just being able, basically that process enabled us to create something in a few hours. Right. So pretty much like right after that, it was such a clear objective that was uncovered and vision and everything that I pretty much just went right into cranking.
You like, know what? It was, I'm glad you brought that up because
yeah,
I think one of the big intimidation factors with the design sprint process is like prototyping the day, right? Like, oh my gosh, I have to design something in one day. I can't do that. I don't have time. And, you know, I know it can be challenging for designers because they set a high bar for themselves, and rightfully so. So they feel like it could be daunting to, you know, create a prototype. First of all, I don't think a prototype should be done by one solo designer. I'm a big believer in having like a two or three person team. I don't think you should have more than three to do a prototype, but one is a challenge. Doable, but it's a challenge. And I know, Maria, you and I worked on the prototype, right, for the project we worked on. So you weren't totally alone, but I understand, it was kind of probably a little bit intimidating for you at first, right?
Yeah, I think it is almost it shouldn't be, I guess, but sometimes it is unusual to be able to have that clear of a path carved out for you to jump into prototyping. And I have many times rapid prototyped, and been able to do it, but kind of having to wing it with some unknowns just because we didn't have this structure, which is the sprint methodology that, you know, we're chatting about today. It was just kind of a lot of unknowns, and I just try to use my best judgment. But right. This actually created a space where you don't have to worry about all these ifs because you've kind of dived deep and taken the time to uncover them and figure out which ifs will turn into do's, or, you know, things that become actionable items from rough ideas. Yeah. So yeah.
Well, I think kind of one thing I'm hearing from this is that like the design sprint, especially like the first half of the workshops, can eliminate a lot of the unknowns, right? You know, because there is a lot of clarity and alignment that gets created between like the creative team, like the production team, and maybe the high level stakeholders, or, you know, anyone else in the room that might not do the prototype. They're able to kind of really clearly communicate what they believe should be in the prototype, and the creative team gets to clearly communicate what they what they think they should have in the prototype. So, you know, by doing the design sprint and having those workshops, you're able to create an environment where all the best ideas really usually get surfaced. Not always, but, you know, from my experience, it usually happens. And by the time you're ready to hit the prototype production mode, you have so much data to work with.
Indeed. And not only is there a lot of data, but I think a lot of empathy is built within a team after experiencing a good design sprint process. Just it is a really great team building activity that also happens to yield a real product, or it could just be for practice products too. Like, you know, if you're just trying to get warmed up as a team, it's a great, even just doing practice sprints, there's a great way to get synced up with communication styles. Also with like where everyone stands in the company as far as like what their individual perspective is, and getting that heard. And a lot of times that just doesn't fully happen. So, you know, actually being able to fully see everyone's creativity come out in a number of different ways and perspectives is a great way for a team to bond and to work better in the future.
No, 100%. I think, we kind of been hashing down this over and over again. Like, this is just a great recipe to create like the ultimate collaboration. And I think you brought up a great point earlier, but you were saying that something that's really true about the design sprint is that it doesn't like guarantee like a hyper successful product. Like in the first week, like, you know, I think there's another expectation for, you know, people that know about the design sprint that, oh, I'm going to have a prototype that's been tested and the testers are going to love it because we did a great job in the workshop. Like, it's not how it works. You might come up with something you think is a great idea the first half of the sprint, but it doesn't jive with user testers. And you kind of find out, well, maybe this isn't the best idea or that prototype was a failure. And that's okay. It's okay to fail because that's where iteration comes from. You know, you just get to think MVP. Yep. And then you could do another design sprint to kind of work on that prototype or maybe spend a little bit longer if you want. But you could break everything up into sprints, basically.
That's what's cool, too, is it kind of creates a modular system. It's also a cyclical system too, I guess, or circular system in a way too, but it creates these like little modules. Like, okay, we're going to do design sprint one, rapid prototype test, see what happens. Then we go back. That's where the circular aspect come back, iterate, plug in a second module of sprinting and on until you can come up with a more, you know, tied together version of the original MVP.
Right.
And so it's kind of cool because it's like, it's okay, we'll just run another sprint. And it is so efficient that it's not actually daunting to run another sprint.
No, it's a really, really good point because something we started to do with Toy, you know, by leading with a design sprint, it's kind of forcing our engagements into a sprint system in a way where, you know, we'll work on like short, midterm, and long-term projects. So, but we break it down in sprints now. So instead of saying like, oh, we're going to work on an engagement for 6 months, like, no, we're going to do a series of sprints that might lead up to 6 months. And it, like, because of that, we're able to course correct and do workshops and tests and reevaluate things. And, you know, one of the things we believe is that we get a scaffold, you know, to the most appropriate solution rather than kind of trying to do everything at once and hope for the best. And I think by kicking off projects with a design sprint, it kind of forces that kind of scaffolding, working in bursts mentality, you know, for both the creative teams and the clients or the stakeholders.
Actually, speaking of clients, so how have you seen this whole, everything we're talking about here with the sprints, like what impact have you seen it have on your clients and how have they responded to implementing this into projects?
Well, thank you for asking because that's a really good question. I think we have a great group of clients and, you know, overall, I would say one consistent theme with all of our clients is that, you know, when they engage with us, they, you know, they have ideas and they want to be heard and, you know, they feel like they have some solutions pre-prescribed. And I think the prescription part is probably not something they should come with, you know, or bring, you know, come to the table with, but it's understandable that they kind of have that a little bit. So I think what's cool about the design sprint, it kind of lets us hear a little bit of maybe their pre-prescribed solutions and, you know, what they feel is already kind of the best way to go with their product. But going through the process, it allows us to either kind of like validate some of those assumptions that they made or help provide them some insight and say, wow, I thought I really, you know, had the best idea, but, you know, my partner or my junior developer or someone from Toy has a really great idea that I think we should pursue instead. So again, I think they really appreciate kind of this environment that kind of fosters and facilitates ideation and innovation. And I know that sounds like super, all these fancy words, innovation, ideation, oh, you know, all the design speak, but there's some truth and reality to that in the sense where it kind of stakeholders are, you know, we kind of disarm our clients. And I don't mean that in a negative way. Again, after every workshop, they're super appreciative. They get to come in and kind of like, because everyone gets risen to their level as far as the conversation goes, it allows them to listen more. And I'm not saying our clients don't listen. Again, they're great people and I love working with them. So it's totally not a knock on our clients. If you're a client of Toy, please take that to heart. I'm not saying that you're doing anything wrong. I'm just saying that we create an environment where everyone gets to listen and all the best ideas come to the table. And there are plenty of times where, the ideas of our clients do end up being the best ideas, and we definitely run with them. So, yeah, I know I kind of went on a rant there and kind of accidentally semi insulted some of our clients. So we should probably move on.
No, I don't think it's insulting. I think it's just addressing, just like the human tendency to get attached or romanced by an idea they have or someone else has, and to let that stifle an even better idea from coming through. So it's not just a client thing. It's like literally everybody does this.
Yes.
Outside of the creative environment, outside of an entrepreneurial environment.
Good. Yes. That's what I meant to say. Listen to Maria. Don't listen to me. She's absolutely right. It's a human thing. But seriously, no, our clients have been great and they love the process. And I always really, really appreciate that they take the time and the effort to participate in the sprint workshops, because, you know, they're really successful people doing amazing things. And, you know, I always appreciate their time.
Yeah. And of course, with every sprint, if you're doing this with clients, not just for internal purposes, you do learn so much about your client on such a more deep level. It's just a really interesting connection that happens. And also just seeing how it changes their perspective and how they move forward with their team after the project's over, after the sprint process is over. It's pretty, I don't want to say, like, you know, get too like whimsical here, but it is kind of magical.
No, you should get extra whimsical, and I'm biased because I totally have gone all in on sprints. I've taken some of my other kind of teachings, frameworks that I learned over the last couple of years, and just sprints kind of helped me kind of take that to another level and kind of combine the two. But I know I'm ranting, but like, I think I like how you're talking about like whimsy and magic, because honestly, it's been fun to see how the design sprint is kind of spreading a little bit like wildfire. I think we're still in mostly the early adoption phase of, you know, design sprints in the kind of creative community, in the business community. So that's exciting for us, a toy, because we obviously kind of weren't like the first, but we're pretty close. I'd say we're in that early adoption world, which excites us. And, what I'm trying to get to with kind of this like early adoption ramble here is, you know, how do you see kind of design sprints moving forward? Like, you know, in the future, how do you see them becoming part of the design culture and business culture as like a whole?
Let me just give me a second. I gotta get out my crystal ball real quick.
Perfect. Yes. No.
But what I'm seeing is that I'm actually seeing that this will be eventually such a powerful process that I even see it in like educational environments. Production and manufacturing, medical, solving like hospital solving problems. Even I can even see people using this to diagnose patients better, to solve complex problems, Ooh. To solve complex diagnoses. I can see this being used in every large, not only a current issue, like how to solve cancer, how to solve a number of illnesses that are, you know, being funded in research, but, you know, taking this kind of more focused collective thinking approach, you know, I see it changing the world, and I'm not trying to be over altruistic. I just really think that it's that impactful, and it's only in its fledgling stages of getting out there and becoming known. So I'm really excited for what it could do. And those of you out there listening to this that are maybe just going and being entrepreneurs, or, you know, you're not like a designer, but, you know, you're a creative thinker or whatever. Or even if you know someone who has a business or is trying to break through a certain thing, I would let them know about this process, because it's definitely could drive humanity in a very innovative way very rapidly.
We could basically take that and like cut into commercial, you know, and like Jake Knapp should hire you basically to get people to buy the sprint book. I don't have anything to add to that. That's my point. I think that's well said. Yeah.
Oh, thanks, husband.
I'm not just complimenting you because I'm married to you. I authentically thought that was pretty well said. you know, but if maybe if Jake Knapp stumbles into this, he might he might want to hire you. That's all I'm saying.
Oh.
That's all I was getting at. So anyway, I'm trying to I want to keep our podcast shorter. I'm just going to be blunt with everybody.
Yeah.
So I want to do a segment here kind of like to close out every episode that we do. And I just came up with this. Let's spend a few minutes.
Powerful, Zach. Very powerful.
It was so powerful. I couldn't even express it in real language. No, but seriously, let's spend a few minutes discussing what we should discuss next week. Like, I don't know if we could call that a segment. Like, you know, here's a portion of the show.
Sprint.
Next time.
A little sprint process. Oh, that's about.
That's a great idea.
We should do a live Creative Honey. We should do a recorded Creative Honey sprint about Creative Honey.
Oh, snap. That just reminded me.
Oh, man.
We are doing a design sprint meetup in San Francisco Thursday night. Thursday night, the location is going to be revealed on Thursday. So, you know, if you're interested, you can find us on meetup.com, SF Design Sprints, to check it out. We'll be there. So that reminded me, Maria, because we are going to do like a little live Lightning Decision Jam workshop. Interested to see how that works, how many people show up. I think that'll be a lot of fun, a lot of sticky notes on walls. I'm looking forward to that. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Oh, yeah, no. And Zach, what is the actual date? Because just to give this podcast context, in case you don't think it's a different time.
People might end up listening to this like 5 years from now and thinking that we're going to be there like in 2024. Like, why is there anybody here? What is he talking about? Like, yeah, like who knows what will happen at that point. So that'll be Thursday. Today is the 10th of November, 2018. So I think that's what this
– What?
Like whatever is
– You just said Thursday the 10th.
Oh, okay. Let me repeat all of this again. So today is the 10th. This is when we're recording the podcast. So it would be the 15th, I think, if I'm doing my math correct.
Yep, the 15th. And yep.
I'm glad it's the 15th. To hear that I did my math correctly. So yes, yay. Thursday the 15th. Be there if you can. Hit us up on Meetup. That's the way to find out the location. So, but let's get to that segment of what do you think we're going to talk about next week? What do you want to talk about next week?
Gosh, there's so many potential things.
That's not an answer. What's in your head? You just started this awesome new job.
I honestly wanted to be honest, like what popped into my head was something about UX UI and the healthcare system. And we've been reading a lot of interesting articles at work about this and the challenges that doctors are facing and the impediments that technology is actually creating for them. That's something we've been all talking about at work quite a bit. And in order to solve problems on our end, as we try to continue to update our experience and interface. So, that's something. I don't know if that's something you're into, but
why wouldn't I be into that?
Been really impacting us.
Why it makes you think I wouldn't be into that?
I don't know, because it's like specific to the work I'm doing at, you know, in the healthcare industry.
Well, I promoted our company, a toy, for a good portion of this podcast. Why can't we talk about your company next week?
It's more about the work that, you know, I'm not trying to promote any
particular
company. Well,
I know
company.
That's not what I meant. I get what you're saying.
I'm just trying to talk about experience wise. Hey, I happen to be working in kind of a newer frontier for technology in the healthcare system, which is battling many, many issues right now and is continue to experience growing pains that are causing the care system to struggle and start to collapse. So being part of a team that is creating a product that hopefully can kind of bring it into an age of solutions.
So here we go. I think I got something that's going to be very like shareable, clickbait worthy.
Oh no.
Well, I'm trying to package what you're saying in a positive way.
Are you going to label this next episode? I got a mystery box off the dark web.
I probably will now. Brilliant.
That's the latest trend.
Design sprint in a magical box. No, but seriously, I think we could say something like health, you know, how design is impacting healthcare. How about that?
There you go.
Awesome. There you go, folks. That's going to be the next podcast, design, how it's affecting healthcare. And I'm sure we'll probably hit another industry or two. I know we'll probably talk about the Apple Watch, which is really exciting. And how about that? That said, I think we should cut off here. Thank you all for listening. Really appreciate that. You come out and listen to us, especially when we kind of show up basically, you know, once every 1,000 years. And I know I'm being facetious, but yeah, no, hopefully we'll be jumping out here a lot more, because we're just gonna turn on the microphone and do what we did today, and hopefully also like what we're saying. So Maria, do you have anything you want to say before to the listeners before we turn off the
mics? So, you know, in all honesty, you know, we have continuously struggled with the load of keeping up a podcast ourselves. And so one of the things we're really looking forward to is hiring an editor to actually edit all these episodes we're going to be whipping out. Cause that was one of the major things that bogged us down with our full-time workload. So.
And who's going to be editing?
Well, my brother is a very talented, composer, like a
family composer. Plug,
and he is looking like the candidate to
he's already been hired. Yeah. What are you talking about?
I know, I'm just trying not to be biased here, but also just so you know,
John, I've already hired you. I can't talk. Your sister keeps saying you're a candidate. You're totally cool. Like, it's gonna work. It's
and great. Just a little extra little plug about my brother. He actually is the one who created our little theme song at the beginning of our episode. And we've actually used a number of
double family plug.
We've actually used a number of his songs throughout many of our podcasts. And ran out recently of songs, so I started using other songs. But for a long time, we actually embedded his songs as our kind of, we did a couple songs through each podcast. So, hopefully, I think that's going to be a big deal for us, and also will allow us to actually focus more on just creating the content and letting you guys know about it instead of just getting totally back.
And we get to do what other podcasts get do and say, like, John, go ahead, cut that out.
Yeah, okay, John. Just
I mean, I just feel way more official that I get to say that now.
Oh boy, it's already going to his head. This is dangerous.
No, but seriously, John's gonna be super helpful, and so good stuff. Thank you everybody for listening. And sayonara. Bye.
Bye. For more Creative Honey episodes, visit our iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere that aggregates podcasts. You can also visit our blog at www.creativehoney.org. Additionally, you can check out our social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We post updates on Instagram especially, so stay tuned on there for extra little tidbits and upcoming episode announcements. If you enjoyed this episode or generally enjoy our podcast, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out. Thank you so much for your continued support and for listening to Creative Honey. We'll be back again soon. Thanks.